Hello and welcome to series two of the LGC News Roundup podcast. We're back to look at the biggest issues affecting the local government sector every week. My name's Martin George. I'm deputy editor of the LGC. And this week I'm joined by Sarah Calkin, the editor. Hi, Sarah.
Hello. It's good to be back.
Yep. Great to have you back as well. And Kwame Bwakye, our reporter. Kwame, welcome to you as well.
Hi, great to be here. Thank you. Cheers.
And making your podcast debut as well. So great to have you with us. Now, I thought this week, let's look at three big things. First, the COVID inquiry. Second, we'll have a look at important news about the administration of elections. And then, of course, big news with the LGA conference happening next week. We'll have a bit of a preview and talk of some of the big issues that the sector will be wanting to hear about when that comes along in Bournemouth. But first, let's talk about the COVID inquiry. Now, Kwame, you wrote what has been our most popular story on the website this week, and it was about Matt Hancock, the former Health and Social Care Secretary, who gave evidence to the inquiry this week. Tell us a bit about what was it he said that so enraged or interested the LGC audience?
Well, yeah, so whilst he was giving evidence in the COVID inquiry, he said that, and this is what caused most consternation with our readers, is that when the pandemic struck, local authorities were required to have pandemic preparedness plans. But when he asked to see them, his Minister for Social Care at the time, Helen Whatley, found there were only two, which she reported to him that they were wholly inadequate. So he was basically sort of saying that local authorities weren't really prepared for the pandemic, didn't really have plans in place, and was sort of shoveling the blame onto councils at that time. He also said that he didn't really feel like he had the levers to act because of the way that social care is managed in this country.
Yeah, I remember that was kind of thing that came out at the time, wasn't it? I remember that. And I mean, on the wholly inadequate point, I think we're going to be hearing in the coming weeks from Jim McManus, who's president of the Association of Directors of Public Health, and also Mark Lloyd, chief exec of the Local Government Association. So I'm sure they might want to push back on that, and I'm sure they'll have something to say when they take the stand. But yeah, this idea that as Health and Social Care Secretary, he didn't have the levers on the social care system, because unlike the NHS, it's, you know, the social care sector is lots, literally thousands of different private sector businesses, in most cases, or possibly third sector, that are delivering services. And when they wanted to implement things quickly en masse, they didn't have the channels to communicate with them. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the inquiry makes of his evidence when it does its report.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one thing I wrote about a couple of weeks ago when the inquiry started was I hope that, I mean, local government the last two or three years has really talked about how well it did in the pandemic and how the many cases where local proved to be the best way when centralised approaches didn't work. But I really hope that the sector is open to fair and valid criticism. I'm not saying that what Matt Hancock says is a case of this, but do you think the sector, Sarah, I mean, the reaction to Hancock's comments was immediate sort of anger and defensiveness. Do you think the sector will be open to scrutiny of how it performed itself rather than just it putting scrutiny on the centre?
I hope so. And I think so probably when it comes from the inquiry and, you know, when the independent chair that has considered all the evidence. I think part of the reason that this story got the reaction that it did is because it was Matt Hancock that was saying it. And, you know, those people who were working in local government at the time will very well remember this sort of pattern that we had of Matt Hancock or Prime Minister Boris Johnson then standing up at a press conference and making some kind of announcement and then expecting local government to deliver it, when actually they were finding out about it at the same time as everyone else. You know, there's also Matt Hancock's famous comment that he put a protective ring around care homes. Well, that was certainly not what local government was experiencing on the ground when care homes were coming under pressure to admit people who hadn't been tested for COVID, with all the knock-on effects that we now know that had really tragic consequences. So I hope the sector will take on board any criticisms from the inquiry chair, but I think it all just felt a bit rich coming from Matt Hancock.
Yeah, no, I think that was the feeling. I think the point you made, Kwame, about, you know, shifting the blame here, you're a politician, that's what politicians do, perhaps. Sarah, another big name at the inquiry this week, Duncan Selby, who, of course, was Director of Public Health England, and himself, some might feel, was scapegoated during the pandemic. What did he have to say?
Yeah, so he's really interesting as well. And just for listeners, in case you don't remember, at the height of the pandemic, the biggest public health emergency, hopefully in any of our lifetimes, the government decided to disband Public Health England and set up a new organisation, the UK Health Security Agency, I think. And there was obviously, I think, a lot of politics involved in that. Duncan Selby, this is the big thing that came out of his evidence, was that Jeremy Hunt had wanted to cut public health budgets even more than they actually were cut during the 2010s, and that he kind of pushed back against that. I remember interviewing him at the time when everyone was outraged at the scale of the cuts to public health budget, and he defended them. But obviously today, now he's no longer in post, he's got to have his say and kind of tell us what actually went on in private. So that, I think a lot of people will be really interested in that.
It's funny, I saw on Twitter a lot of people made that point you just made, that back in 2015 or whatever, he publicly defended the cuts to public health budget. So again, perhaps we'll see from some people at the inquiry, you know, benefits of hindsight or reputation management. Again, I'm not saying that's what Duncan Selby is doing in this instance. Now, Kwame, another big story you've been following for weeks, months now, I think, is reforms to the electoral system. Most notably, the introduction of voter ID requirements at the polling stations in this May's elections, but other things coming down the road as well. And we've had a couple of really important insights this week into how it's gone and concerns about future elections.
Yeah, that's right. So the Electoral Commission's report was published this week, and it found that approximately 14,000 people were not able to vote on the 4th of May because of not having the correct ID or invalid ID or what have you. Which is 14,000, I guess it doesn't maybe sound like maybe a lot. It's sort of like in the grand scheme of things, but I think it's important to remember that this was a local election. So at the next general election, when the turnout will be a lot higher, this could be a real issue. On top of that, there are changes coming through in the being phased in over 2023 and 2024, which will include extending votes at the general election to British citizens living overseas by removing the 15-year limit on the eligibility for them to register to vote. There's also changes in online postal and proxy applications, which mean that permanent proxy applications will need to go through a new ID verification process. And on top of that, there are new parliamentary constituency boundaries being introduced, as well as the return of snap general elections. So there is a lot for local authorities to take on board, as well as voter ID on a national scale when we return to the polls for the general election, which is expected to be next year. Now, I spoke to Peter Stanion a couple of days ago, the chief executive of the Association of Electoral Administrators, and he said that whilst he doesn't expect there to be, despite these sort of the changes that are coming in, he's not really expecting there to be one mass sort of problem. He's suggesting that there will be 10 or 15 constituencies that need to be rerun because of potentially because of all the changes that are coming in. So it's a bit of an uncertain time. You know, I read yesterday that in the past 100 years, there've just been three UK parliamentary elections that have been declared null and void.
I think if there was 10 to 15 constituencies where they had to rerun the elections, I mean, I think that would cause huge disruption and actually have that exact opposite effect to what the government says that the stated aim of these reforms is, of actually undermining trust and confidence in our democracy. So, yeah, I think it's really concerning. And I don't think the AEA, you know, they're not prone to hyperbole, or, you know, that they're measured professional officers. You know, they haven't got a political axe to grind or anything like that. So for them to come out and say that, I think people should be concerned, really. And I think the government needs to listen to them.
I mean, the thing that struck me when, and I know, Sarah, you picked out that point and tweeted about it, this, you know, idea that there could be 10, 15 constituencies where they could be having to rerun parliamentary elections. I mean, A, that hasn't happened before in the social media age and the age of electoral conspiracies and all that sort of Trumpesque stuff that, I mean, you talked about in your LGC briefing yesterday, Kwame. So that gives a lot more scope for all that disinformation and mistrust being amplified more than we've ever seen before. But also, if we're having a tight election, I mean, if there was, you know, if 10 seats, 15 seats was the difference between a majority government and a minority government, or who coalition partners could or couldn't be, or what the arithmetic was, again, that's an awful lot to then be left hanging potentially for months while this stuff goes through, you know, election courts and appeals and judicial reviews and by-elections and all this. It's a genuine concern, isn't it? As you say, it's not just theoretical or somebody sort of, you know, shouting in the street.
I can remember the days you know, when before the coalition formed, I think we had a sort of, was it a weekend or a few days before we knew who the government was going to be, and it was, you know, it was a bit sort of unsettling. And, you know, if that was to go on for weeks because they had to rerun the polls, then it would not be good.
Bonus question for listeners. Kwame, you mentioned that there were three constituencies in the past 100 years that have been, where the results have been declared void and elections have been rerun. Can listeners name them? They happened in 1923, 1997 and 2010, and I will tweet the answer at some point next week. So follow me on Twitter to get that vital bit of electoral information for your next pub quiz.
And I don't know if that's an attempt to boost your Twitter following. I'm not sure how effective it will be.
There'll be one nerd out there who needs to know.
Yeah, well,
I hope.
And I really need to know now as well, so I'll look out for that.
Now, of course, I mean, the big thing for all our listeners, all our readers, they'll be travelling en masse to Bournemouth next week. It's the annual Local Government Association conference. As ever, thousands of people will be there, but it's not, of course, just council leaders and chief execs and sort of senior people in the sector. We've got Sir Keir Starmer, we've got Michael Gove, we've got, I think, is it the Education Secretary, Julianne Keegan, among others. Let's do a bit of a preview. What can we expect from the conference? What will local government be wanting to hear from potentially the next Prime Minister, certainly the current Levelling Up Secretary?
Well, I think, so before we get to the conference, we've been told that Oflog, this new Office of Local Government, which is going to be a new kind of oversight body for local government or monitor its performance. We're not entirely sure exactly what its remit is going to be even, but we're told it will be launched officially before the conference. So I think that's going to be a big topic of conversation. And hopefully, you know, Michael Gove in his speech will say more about how it will work and what it's intended to do. I think my kind of question is, what does the government think the point of Oflog is? Like, we had some comments today, I think, Kwame, it was your story with Rob Whiteman and the SIPFA chief executive and Tony McArdle, who's a commissioner in Thurrock, saying actually Offlog as currently proposed would not have prevented one of these big high profile council failures that we've seen. So therefore, what is the point of it? And so that's what I'll be listening out for, and hopefully Michael Gove will have the answer. I think Keir Starmer, I mean, I think people will be interested to see what he says on devolution. Obviously, there was the Gordon Brown report at the start of the year, which was a big sort of look at what the Labour Party in government might do in terms of devolving to local areas. And that was sort of well received, we think, by Sir Keir Starmer. But, you know, what will that mean in practice? So it would be great if he would flesh that out a bit, I think.
I mean, has he said that the first thing he'd do in government is table a take back control bill, or one of the very first things he'd do? And that's around this whole devolution and giving powers to local areas.
He did say that, but I suppose, yeah, maybe he could tell us what he's going to put in the bill. That would be.
Yeah. I mean, we've heard whispers, haven't we, that, you know, Labour are kind of working on the drafting of that bill at the moment, because if they're going to want to put it, you know, that quickly, it's got to be written now, basically. So I'm sure there'll be questions about that, won't there?
Mm, absolutely. And I think the other important thing to say about this year's LGA conference is the LGA has a new chair, or will have from next week, who is Sean Davies, who's leader of Telford and Wrekin Council, and he's a Labour chair. So following May's elections, Labour took control of the LGA for the first time since, I think, about 2014. So that could be a big change, and it's going to be really interesting to see what Sean is like in that role, really, as the sort of sector's national voice on the national stage. He seems to be well liked across party, and obviously it's an apolitical role, but I think it does change the dynamic that you've got the Labour Party holding the chair of the LGA rather than a Conservative chair who may have been more reluctant to kind of embarrass the government or sort of push them publicly on things. So it's going to be interesting to see.
How about another dynamic there as well, though, because Sean, I believe, is also standing as a parliamentary candidate for Labour in a potentially winnable seat at the general election. So are we going to have a non sort of partisan figurehead of the LGA on the one hand, on the other hand then vehemently attacking the government in his sort of constituency campaigning role? I mean, is that going to be tricky, do you think?
I think it could be. I interviewed him this week, and that's under embargo, but I think I can, you know, we did ask him about that, and he said he will leave his Labour Party membership card in Telford when he goes out to do the LGA role. You know, I suppose his point is, you know, when the election campaign comes round, the general election campaign, then the LGA will be in purdah anyway, so it won't be making public pronouncements. And he described himself as being put in a deep freeze purdah. But then, you know, he's got a big majority to overturn, and, you know, campaigning usually tends to start before the campaign proper. So, I think it's going to be interesting to see how he manages that and if that causes any issues.
Yeah. The other thing I'm interested in with Keir Starmer is, will we see the devolution Keir Starmer from his public speeches, or will we see the sort of centralising Keir Starmer, where he seems to be intervening in individual councils where he thinks things are going wrong, where they're Labour controlled, or where they're blocking candidates for devolved mayoral positions in one case? It seems to be a tension within the Labour Party, as always, perhaps, between central control and devolution. And do you think we'll have any clearer of how a Starmer government would actually govern in practice? You know, all the nice words they have in opposition about taking their hands off the levers and giving control. They've worked all this time to get into government and to have their hands on those levers. Will they really be able to let go?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I'd be interested to see if he gets asked about the recent political interventions that the Labour Party's made in places like Birmingham, and with North of Tyne, where they prevented Jamie Driscoll from running to be mayor of the North East. So, yeah, we'll definitely lots to watch out for. And Kwame, it's going to be your first LGA conference, isn't it? What are you prepared?
I have a fair idea what to expect. Yeah, I think it's going to be, going to be meeting lots of people. It's going to be very informative. I'm really looking forward to it. Should be a great experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything in particular you've got your eye on, or you sort of think that's something I really want to get to or talk about?
Well, yeah. So on the Wednesday morning, bright and early, I think at 8:15, SIPFRA are doing a learning lessons of Section 114, a roadmap for avoidance. And I've covered Woking, Croydon, Slough, Thurrock. So I've covered a lot of councils that have encountered financial problems. So to sort of maybe see where they went wrong and lessons that could have been learned will be really interesting for me on that front.
That's going to be a really, really key session, I think.
I think they've got Woking's current finance director speaking out. So it should be, that sounds like a good one. And and SIPFRA, you can buy us a drink in Bournemouth for the free plug.
Free publicity there, yes, absolutely. I mean, my own personal highlight I'm looking forward to. Obviously, we've seen Michael Gove. He often goes viral when he ends up late in the night in some nightclub in Aberdeen dancing away. People who were at the LGA conference last year, I think Lisa Nandy had a good time, let's say, at the LGBTQ disco.
Yeah.
Would it be an insult to the sect if Michael Gove didn't turn up at that disco and also have an equally good time? Well, listeners, tweet us, send us your videos of prominent politicians on the dance floor at 4 a.m. And we might not be able to print them or publish them, but we'll certainly have a good laugh. So, look forward to that. Sarah, Kwame, thank you very much. Really enjoyed that. It's good to be back. And look forward to talking next time about everything that went on at the LGA conference. Thank you, everyone, for listening.